Chad, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
I am fantastic. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. You are a Minnesota guy originally. That's where you flew in from over the last couple of days. It's starting to get warm here in Austin. What were the conditions that you left in Minnesota to come here this weekend?
It's actually starting to get warm there too. Yeah. So I was in Minnesota, flew to San Diego, went to a concert. And then my daughter goes to school out in Southern California, and it's her finals week. So I went and had breakfast with her. So this weather is right on point for what I've been dealing with.
Love to hear it. What was the concert?
Justin Timberlake.
Okay.
I know. I do not look like I would enjoy a Justin Timberlake concert. My girlfriend loves him since she was, you know, like 3 years old or something. So it's I don't know if that's right, but. Absolutely fantastic. It was a great show.
It seems like that would be a really fun show. Because Timberlake, he's got very catchy music. Obviously, the ladies are going to be going crazy too. And I'm sure there's some an aesthetic on stage for guys like us. That's pretty amusing, if nothing else.
Yeah, and he's a funny dude, I think. Yeah. You know, all the SNL stuff that he did, and it was really entertaining.
That's cool. So you have performed at the Comedy Mothership, if I'm remembering correctly. I feel like I've seen a picture or two of you at the Mothership. It's obviously gotten rave reviews in the little bit more than a year that it has been up and running. What were your initial impressions of that place, Chad?
Well, I don't really know. You know, everybody talks about Rogan in a certain way. And you know, I like to experience things myself before I have any sort of, opinion on it. And so I went down there. Everybody was super cool. Everybody was really nice. It wasn't what you think. You know, it's not like people are planning the next January 6th in the green room. It's like a normal comedy club where you go there and patrons come to listen to jokes and laugh, and then comedians get on stage and make them laugh. I mean, it's exactly like all the other comedy clubs. It's exactly what you'd think.
I'm sure the green room hang is a big exchange of ideas as well, because that's typically what happens when comics come together. They're just messing with one another and maybe
on
politics or sports or whatever else. But yeah, it's not the January 6th bit necessarily.
Right. It's a ton of just busting balls like everywhere else. Yep.
You are a big Minnesota sports fan. You guys are having a bit of a moment right now, a game 7. In the finals, there's maybe some hope on the horizon for the Vikes, though. But I feel like Minnesota is maybe an underrated city in terms of tortured sports town. So I guess it's got to feel pretty good to get some positive vibes going this year, huh?
Yeah, it's nice. You know, a lot of Minnesota teams, our kind of MO is pissing it down our leg.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think a lot of people thought as soon as the T-Wolves lost 2 at home, that they were going to fold and it was going to be, you know, done 4-2. Denver was going to take it. There's been one close game, and that was game 1. Otherwise, it has just been an ass whooping on one side or the other. And so I'm interested to see what's going to happen in game 7, because it really looks like they figured something out defensively, where they put, you know, the big cat or Nas on Jokic, and then they have Rudy playing defense on Gordon or Murray with his long ass arms, and people, they're not able to get their shots off. So last night looked great, and it gives us a little hope. And if nothing else, you know, at least they didn't just fold, because a lot of Minnesota teams in the past have absolutely folded.
Is it a good or bad thing that the Kirk Cousins era is now over with the Vikings, with him moving on to Atlanta and you guys drafting a QB in the first round?
In my opinion, I have disliked Kirk Cousins since the moment he signed with the Vikings. And you get all these people like, well, look at his stats. Well, guess what, bitch? Look at when the stats are taken. It's never the last 5 minutes of the first half or second half. It's always like the middle of the game when it doesn't matter. Like you look at the 49ers game on Monday night where Cousins threw a pick and Jordan Addison went and took the ball from the defender and scored a touchdown. That broke their back. And that is going to go down as a touchdown pass for Kirk Cousins of over 70 yards. And he threw an interception. Yeah. That's wild to me. I think the stat sheet should go, That's a pick. Then we give Jordan Addison a takeaway and a touchdown because everybody's was making him look so good. And it's like, how many years in a row do you want the same guy to make the same mistake? Everyone's like, oh, did you watch Quarterback on Netflix? He was so nice. He was reading history to his kids. And it's like, maybe he should read a math book where it says, if you need 8 yards, don't throw it 3 yards. Is there a story problem about that? And I actually saw him. We were down on the field for that 49ers game. And I saw him break away from practice and come over to this young kid that was in a wheelchair. And I'm telling you, it was like, it wasn't scripted. No PR guy went over to Kirk and said, hey, can you do this? Kirk legitimately saw the kid and ran over there. That kind of stuff, I think that is what sports are about. I think that's what's being famous is about. If you use your, you know, fanship for good, like that kind of stuff, great. However, when you're in the playoffs, it's not about, it's about getting the job done. And so I think, so I don't know if I can say this, but I'm going to say this. My buddy sent me a text when Kirk got traded, and he goes, Kirk belongs in the South where they don't mind getting screwed by Cousins. Man, that made me laugh so hard. And I'm stoked for Sam Darnold, and I'm stoked for JJ because I don't care who's in there. As long as it's not a guy that can't get through the playoffs and is taking the majority of the salary cap and making sure that you can't fill in the holes where, you know, we needed some players and we couldn't afford them. And so now we can. And I think that's going to be great. And so I gave my girlfriend, she has endured some nonsense from me on Sundays. So I have given her a no complaining about the Vikings guarantee for the entire season. I don't care if they go over, doesn't matter to me. As long as I'm not watching the same guy do the same stuff.
The numbers are out on Kirk Cousins, and this did get a little bit better with Minnesota these last couple of years, but the guy is not very good in prime time. So can you be a great person, but also not a championship caliber quarterback? Absolutely. Both things can be true. So you can root for him in the game of life while also not wanting them to be your signal caller either. And so for Falcons fans now, he may have even more talent around him than he did in Minnesota. And they're going to have to deal with however long he remains that team's starting quarterback before Phoenix ultimately takes over. They're going to have to deal with the highs and lows that comes with Kirk Cousins being your QB, including running up the stats in the fourth quarter of games that are already so out of hand that the Falcons or the Vikings in the past had no choice but to throw the football.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you have to – when they're playing prevent defense and you're able to throw eight-yard slants and the guy's running 23 yards, that's fantastic. But then that should be in a separate stat category. Do I cheer for Kirk Cousins in the game of life, like you said? Absolutely. I want everybody to succeed. I really do. Do I want him as a quarterback? I don't know. Maybe for $15 million a year. But not for what they were paying him. I mean, that's wild.
Well, yeah, and give his agent a ton of credit, too, because he was the first QB to get all guaranteed money from you guys when he left Washington to come to Minnesota. Yeah. So he clearly has a business savvy about him. That quarterback series did wonders for his PR. Yep. I think it helped turn into what he's making now in Atlanta, which is largely guaranteed as well. By the way, you mentioned your girlfriend a couple of times. Also, another very talented comedian, Kelsey Cook. She's going to be an awesome end of the year at Cap City Comedy Club. I heard y'all's Pretend Problems podcast. I feel like it was the most recent episode where she was getting on you for being loud at sporting events. I'm totally on your side with that. If you're not using vulgar language, you're allowed to yell at sporting events. And it sounds like you're going Duke basketball level with your research as well to really get in the ears of the opponents for whatever the team is.
I love it. I never curse at games because I know that there can be kids within earshot and stuff like that. And I'm never being a complete jerk to anybody. I'm just trying to make it as silly as possible. And it means a lot to me when a right fielder will turn around and start laughing at something I'm saying. I think it's wonderful. And so that's what I try to get out of it. And, you know, she is kind of quiet in public and stuff like that. And I'm the complete opposite. She gets embarrassed very easily, and I get embarrassed hardly ever. And so when we're in public, it can really, really be uncomfortable for her. But yeah, I love being loud at sporting events, and as long as it's entertaining, right? If I can tell people are getting annoyed, I will shut it down and I'll understand today's not my day, right? But you know, I feel like Kirk Cousins, I have some pretty solid stats.
What is the best roast or burn that you've thrown out there at an athlete?
Well, this wasn't even at an athlete. This was a guy. I was at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City.
Okay.
And or Kauffman Field, I think it is. And the Twins were playing in Kansas City. And then later that day, there was a Vikings-Chiefs preseason game across the parking lot. And by the time the baseball game was over, everyone was so drunk that we were watching people stumble across the parking lot. We're like, this football game is going to be a nightmare for sure. But it was a foul ball lands in the seats. We were on the left field line, way down by the foul pole. And there was a Boy Scout or a Cub Scout troop, you know, there. And this guy got the ball. And so I go, give it to a kid. And, you know, and he's like holding on to the ball. I go, come on, man, give it to a kid. Well, cut to 5 minutes later, the stadium is chanting, give it to a kid. Jock Jones from the Minnesota Twins turns to us and he goes, hey, give it to a kid. We're trying to play a game here. Give it to a kid. And this guy slams the ball down on the stairs. And then you see all the Cub Scouts go crazy and get the ball. And I go, that was awesome, man. And the guy goes, I have a kid at school right now that I was going to give it to. And I go, take him out of school and bring him to the baseball game. What are you doing? You're just going to go to the game by yourself, you weirdo? Get your kid out of school.
Yeah. That guy strikes me as maybe not the best dad, but I'm not going to have you go into this again, but you know about not great dads. I also know about not great dads too. Yeah. Take your kid out of school. That's actually one of the weird unforeseen joys for me as a dad. I've got a 9 and 7 year old. I know both your kids are growing up. You also have a son and a daughter, but to have those moments where it's like, you know what? We're going to skip school today. We're going to go do this instead. You don't always have to be sick to miss a day of school. Might you miss a quiz or a test or something? Sure. But it's just elementary school. You're really not going to be missing anything that important.
Yeah. I brought my daughter on a mini tour. It was like 8 days. We started in Memphis, went all the way around through Kansas City, Louisville, Nashville, Huntsville, Alabama, and then Atlanta. And so we started off in Memphis. We went to Graceland. We went to the museum. It's the motel where Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated.
Oh, wow.
And they turned that into a hotel. That is, and I probably is going to sound ridiculous, but it's emotionally exhausting. If you're going to go to that, don't plan anything else for the rest of the day because it's very quiet and you're not really doing anything physically, but you are drained after it. And then in Atlanta, we went to see MLK Jr.'s childhood home. Mm-hmm. And so I took my daughter out of school for this trip. And one of her teachers was so resistant. And it was the history teacher. And she kept saying, well, we're going to learn a lot this week. And I go, are you out of your mind? Do you know the trip I have planned for my daughter? She is going to learn more on this trip firsthand than you're going to be able to teach her out of a book. And so kind of butted heads like that. But I always think, if you have a chance to bring a kid out of school and show them the real stuff, man, you got to go for that.
Yeah, museums, things like that, going to like a national park or something. It's been a staple for us at times. Like when one of my kids has a field trip, I'll take the other one out of school and we'll go do the field trip too. And I'll be a chaperone for my other kid's class. So we've gone to a museum. We've gone to this STEM museum that's here in Austin too. And at the end of the day, both kids enjoy it a little bit more, and I got some brownie points as a dad too, you know, so it's win-win.
Yeah, that's great. And I always picture those kids going back to school and the teacher saying something and they raise their hand and they go, well, yeah, when I skipped school that day, I saw this and this makes sense. And now I know this. That's a good feeling too.
Not to put you on the spot here, but MLK is obviously one of the most important figures in human history. Do you have a favorite quote of MLK's or a favorite idea of his?
The idea of, I've talked about this before. Kelsey and I asked each other, who are the five people we would have dinner with?
Yep.
And the idea of turning the other cheek when you, to make a point, right? No violence. Even when like someone is hitting you in the face, to be able to say, I'm going to show peace and restraint in this situation to prove my point is so admirable. And I don't think I could do it, by the way. That I think that's why, right? When I see somebody playing a big piano piece or doing anything I can't do, it's always so amazing to me because it's just not in my wheelhouse. And what he did and getting people to follow him in that ideology is just so impressive. And it really still doesn't even make sense to me. I can't really grasp it because of all the violence that was going on around them. And then for them to say, no, this is how we get our attention. We go peacefully. And this is how we get national news. And this is how it doesn't come back on us. I mean, all that stuff is incredible to me.
Yeah, agreed. On the flip side, though, when was the last time you were in a physical fight? Why did it happen? And what was the outcome?
Ooh, physical fight. My son's 24. So 17-ish years ago, I got in a fight for, well, very, very personal reasons. And the outcome was the police were called and my son saw it. He was supposed to stay in the car. And he got out of the car and saw it. And that's the last time I've thrown a punch. And I've been punched two times since then. And just kind of was like, all right, you got your punch in, I'm out. You know, and it doesn't feel very, I guess, manly, right? Because you want to get up and you want to go, all right, now we go. But I think that the look on my son's face when he saw the fighting was enough for me to never throw a punch again. And the other two times I was punched, I deserved it. So it was fine.
Turn the other cheek there. You followed MLK's advice.
Yeah, I guess. But for me, it wasn't for that. It wasn't like, I'm going to be peaceful. It was, I made a deal because I saw the look on my son's face.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've asked him about that fight and he doesn't remember. So maybe it's in there somewhere. I don't know. Maybe he repressed it, but so far so good. I don't know. I ask him about once a year. I go, you sure you don't remember that? And I kind of walk him through the thing and he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. It's like, well, fantastic.
That's pretty crazy. I feel like I would remember if my dad got into a physical fight. Then again,
I think so too. But maybe that's the push down. I don't know.
Maybe I'm repressing that memory. So your kids are grown now, Chad. And obviously over the last 20 plus years, parents have had a certain set of challenges. It does seem like things have gotten even weirder and harder over the last few years, though. For you, as somebody who has been through that rigmarole and may or may not be considering putting yourself back into that insanity once again, what do you think the biggest challenge is for parents in 2024?
Oh, I guess my son is 24, my daughter's 20. And so we're through in my opinion, through the hardest part. I think the biggest challenge for parents in any generation, in any year, is getting your kids through junior high with a level of self-love and understanding that they are worthy and understanding that whoever's picking on you at school probably has way bigger problems at home and that's why they're picking on you. It really doesn't have anything to do with you. It has to do with what they're dealing with at home and that's just trickling down to you. You know, you hear the story of the dad getting yelled at work, the dad yelling at the mom when he gets home, the mom yelling at the kid and the kid kicking the dog. I think it's that kind of trickle down where it's like, whatever. And that's hard to explain because when you're getting made fun of at school, all you want to do is fight back instead of say like, hey man, I'm sorry. I know what you're going through. But I think middle school is such a breeding ground for not liking yourself and listening to other kids talk crap about you and all that stuff. If you can get your kids through that, I think you're home free, hopefully. And that's, I think that's the biggest challenge always for parents.
So I was listening to you. I think it was the Honeydew podcast that you did a few months back with Ryan Sickler. And you mentioned that when you first got your start, because you are a Minnesota guy, you never moved out to LA or New York. You were Minnesota based the entire time. And kudos to you for making a career of it, because that is a much more difficult path versus going to one of those other stand-up meccas, let's say. But in doing so, early on in your career, you got to open for Mitch Hedberg. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was almost right when I started. And then it ended up kind of going further after that. So I started doing stand-up. 6 months into it, I got offered a gig in I started in Minneapolis. And then I got offered a gig in Grand Forks, North Dakota, which was where the University of North Dakota is. And I went up there and I had an audition week. And it was my audition week was Mitch Hedberg and Darlene Westgore, who's also extremely funny. But Mitch had just come back from the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal, Canada, this big, huge festival. He had just gotten a $500,000 development deal with Fox, which means like basically whatever show he writes, they get first crack at. It's kind of like a retainer. He comes up there and I'd never seen him. And I just obviously fell in love immediately. I mean, it was so brilliant. The pacing, the writing, the all of it.
This is before he had blown up, though.
This is right when he started to blow up. This is on that trip. He landed in Minneapolis, drove to Grand Forks, and he stopped at a gas station and got those blue sunglasses he became kind of famous for. And so this was the genesis of Mitch Hedberg as we all know him now. And then I got the gig. I was up there for 6 months. He came through another time, and we kind of became friends. And then brought me on the road with him, and I got to see kind of the you know, going from this little tiny club in Grand Forks, North Dakota, these giant rooms, these theaters, these, you know, everybody just adored him. I don't think anybody had a bad word to say about him ever. So yeah, that was, that's what, and when we were up in Grand Forks, he has a joke where he says, my friend said, you know what I like? Mashed potatoes. And I was like, come on, man, you got to give me time to guess. So I'm the mashed potato friend. And that was like the greatest thing ever to be in Mitch Hedberg's act as a young comedian. It was, you know, people go like, how was your show last night? I go, who cares? I'm in a Mitch Hedberg joke. Listen to me. It was fantastic to be part of that.
So you got to watch him enter exit velocity. Was there something about that or something else that he maybe taught you about stand-up that you've taken with you all these years later?
The thing that he taught me most, and I guess it wasn't about stand-up necessarily because we're just so different, but it was about how to treat the staff. And I learned this from several people, but how to treat the staff, how to treat the people that are opening for you, how to, you know, treat just the bookers, just everybody. Again, I don't know anyone that had a bad thing to say about him. So I try to live a little bit like that. You know, John Panette, I also opened for him quite a bit. And he's one of the most generous people I've ever met in my entire life. And he taught me a ton about how to treat people too. So, you know, I know my parents and grandparents did a nice job, I think, but within the industry, you have to look to other comedians that really don't, I mean, you think about it, they don't need to be nice. Everybody's coming to see them. The club's making money because of them. It's all about them. And then they're taking the time to turn around. And I mean, just asking somebody like how their day is like, it, you could see it almost startled them because they're like, why are you asking me that? It's like, well, because two humans doing this thing, I guess.
I feel like that's in pretty much anybody's genes from Minnesota as well, unless you maybe run a rec center pickleball league or something.
Yeah, man, that guy was a bit of a nightmare.
All right, last two questions now, Chad. First off, what do you love about Minnesota?
Everything. I mean, Kelsey moved there from Washington, and she's like, winter sucks. And I go, but it doesn't. It doesn't if you do it right, you know. I like taking walks when it's snowing. I like putting on all the gear and just going outside and laying in a snowbank and looking up, watching the snow come down. So that's probably from growing up there. I love the weather. I love the seasons. I love that, you know, I have a little lake cabin in a place called Lakes Country. There's 1,500 lakes in one county. And so it's just, it's awesome to be there in the summer. And I like that it's central. I like that it's, I don't know. I just like that it's, it feels central of the country, but also kind of central of the political spectrum, because Minneapolis and Duluth go blue very quickly and the rest of the state is red. And so you get a lot of different opinions and stuff like that. And I do like hearing from both sides, because I like to have my, you know, my opinions to be informed instead of just come from a bubble.
Yeah, Austin is a lot like that too, with it being surrounded by Texas, and the bigger sure. cities have gone a little bit bluer now, but I dig that appeal as well. All right, last thing now. I love stand-up. You love stand-up. What do you love about stand-up?
Oh, man, I love... So the thing that I've loved the most recently, first of all, just like getting on stage, getting to present your dumb ideas and having people respond to you immediately is incredible, you know? Because right now, right, we're doing radio. We don't know if anyone has laughed one time. But in comedy, you know your ideas like in real time, if they are working and all that stuff. And so I've always loved that. What I love the most recently is, for the last couple of years, I hear from staffs at the end of the week, your crowd is so nice. They're like the nicest crowd we've ever had. And I think that that's pretty cool. And through that, I have met some really fantastic human beings that that have, you know, come to different cities, and I end up spending time with them outside of the comedy club. You know, so I've made some real friends from what started off as fans.
Wow.
And have become friends and important people in my life. So that's been great too.
Bummed for you if you're watching or listening right now. You're not going to get to check Chad out at the Comedy Mothership this weekend. I do recommend, though, that you go to his YouTube page. His latest special is up there now. Tells a hilarious story about his son and a bidet at the very beginning. And also does a great job talking politics, too, but not doing so in a way that skews one side or the other, but really pokes holes sure. in the extremes of both sides, which I think is not just politics, but comedy in general being done right. And it's been a pleasure getting to talk with you here for a few minutes, Chad. Thank you so much for the time today. Enjoy your weekend.
Likewise, Trey. Thank you so much. You too. I appreciate it.
Hey, if you're still watching or listening right now and have not already, I would greatly appreciate you subscribing to my YouTube channel or subscribe to whatever podcast platform you are listening to today's episode on right now. You click that thumbs up button as well if you're on YouTube. Thanks so much to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. And thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. We'll talk to you next time on Books on Pod.